What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drantz. Drantz, he covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. What's up, Drantz?
I'm doing well.
You sound like it.
Yeah, I'm doing well.
Big heavy sigh at the start of the show. Another show. Here we go.
Yeah. Another day talking about the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, if you go read my column at The Athletic, I think you can, like, notice about halfway through where I'm like, this is wild. Like, they shouldn't actually be trading this pick.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I'm basically ruminating on it and talking about the club's lack of luck and, you know, the 6 years that have transpired and, you know, how they got here. And, you know, like, one of the reasons that the Canucks are going to be operating at a draft pick deficit is they've traded mid-round firsts for Miller, Hronek, right? Elias mm-hmm. Lindholm is a rental who was excellent for them in the playoffs, and Marcus Pettersson. And, you know, you can say, like, hey, that's money well spent. Miller delivered more than a mid-round first. Mm-hmm. Hronek has been a godsend. You know, Pettersson stabilized their D. They need characters like that. You get a top four D for a first-round pick, that's usually good business. But it doesn't matter if you don't win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't matter if the team success doesn't follow.
Absolutely. It has not been worth it. It has not been worth it.
Anyway, we'll get into this more. Canucks lost the draft lottery, and I'm just, like, kind of mentally exhausted. Fried. I'm fried thinking about it, I guess.
We'll talk to Justin Cuthbert, too, at 12:30 from the Fan 590 in Toronto. Also doing some pinch-hitting work on the 32 Thoughts podcast during the playoffs. Of course, lots to talk about from that game in Toronto last night. But right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks and the rest of the NHL for today, May 6th, and we'll start with the headlines. And headline number one, the Canucks have regained control of their Twitter account, which, you know, I was really disappointed. I was looking forward to spending a lot of money on the first NHL team-branded cryptocurrency yesterday, only to be devastated when I found out that, in fact, their Twitter account had been hacked. But they're back. They're back in business. It's all good.
Yeah, I mean, Elon Musk waving at me from the Canucks official Twitter account was not something I had in my bingo card.
I was just really choked that it happened like a few minutes after we got off the air.
Right.
That was sad.
We would have had fun with it.
To the hackers, next time, bump that up a little bit.
Yeah, just a little. I liked that it was replying like they were like announced the Jack Hughes acquisition and they replied at fans like noted.
Yeah.
Noted.
It suggests they have, like, some level of awareness of Canucks discourse.
I don't think so. I think they were, like, sardonically
sure.
Just, like, taking feedback, which I appreciate.
They don't have, like, a Team Petey versus Team Miller take.
Guys, I bought the stock. I lost my house. My wife left me. I've never been so bad.
I put it all on the Canucks cryptocurrency. Dang it. It was a scam? What?
I can't believe you have to ask whether or not they were Team Pettersson or Team Miller. They were definitely Team Miller. The crypto bros? Come on.
The crypto hackers?
Not hard to figure out.
Anyways, the real headline is for the Canucks, of course, they officially have the 15th pick in the draft. And as you were just alluding to, there's a lot of different ways to go with this conversation. So first of all, is it fair to say that to use the word likely, that they will likely trade this pick? And I think an important part of this conversation is Patrick Alvin in an interview with our colleague Ian McIntyre yesterday that's up at sportsnet.ca on the topic of this conversation, whether they might trade the pick. Alvin says, I think those are the options that I'm discussing with Jim based on where some of the conversations go with other teams. If we feel that we could impact our team in certain boxes right away, then I definitely think that would be something we have more in-depth conversations about. So definitely leaving the door open to, yeah, if we get the right help right now, we're absolutely open to trading this pick. Would you say more likely than not that the Canucks will trade the 15th overall pick in this year's draft?
I would say I narrowly expect it to happen. So is that...
Okay. But 55-45 kind of thing?
But I'd be very hesitant to handicap it because... ultimately it's going to come down to value and on and on, and these mm-hmm. things can be complicated. I think
you got to find the right deal.
Yeah,
it's not just up to you. It's not a decision they're in full control of.
No,
somebody has to offer them the right thing in return.
And you know, I would imagine the 15th overall pick doesn't get you a standalone top six center without being bundled with additional stuff.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking about some of the hardest to acquire pieces in the NHL. You know, I mean, could it get you like a Michael Rasmussen out of Detroit? Sure. Now, is Michael Rasmussen the answer that you have written down on your, off-season whiteboard of impact players that could change the trajectory of this Canucks team? Right? So, you know, I think once you get into that category of player, we're talking about the first plus, maybe plus plus. And so, you know, I think the Canucks will be flexible in sort of figuring out their options here. But yeah, I mean, was it the day that Tockett left where I started being like, I think they're way more likely to trade that first
yes.
than what I'd previously understood. So I've sort of been there for a week and I remain there today.
So another question I have, is this now the Canucks' most valuable trade asset? Is it more valuable as a standalone asset than, for example, Jonathan Lekker-Mackey, Tom Velander,
nope.
or maybe would you say even the 2026 pick?
The answer is no.
No. So it falls behind those two players?
I think it falls behind Velander for sure. Probably Lekker-Mackey, given how he's tracked, although, you know, the difference is in premium position, right?
Yes.
Like, Velander is the right-handed defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
Lekker-Mackey is still probably viewed widely around the league as one-dimensional scoring winger. And we know that that matters in terms of how teams value these sorts of pieces. So I would say Velander would be more valuable. I think the 2026 first would be more valuable, especially given that at least some teams would view that as like a short selling opportunity.
Yeah.
In addition to the other side of it. So, yeah, I mean, I think both of those assets would remain more valuable. Lekker-Mackey maybe. And then, you know, I what about Demko?
Sure, but I meant more of like the future variety, because
okay.
your reporting suggests that they're more like it's more likely to be traditional futures than players off the roster, like current high end players off the roster.
I mean, I think it is in terms of how the organization is planning to do it, but I also think there's realities that will occur as those conversations
right.
occur that could change that dynamic.
I do think that's an interesting discussion, though. Like, does Demko have more value than the 15th overall pick?
I say yes.
I think he would. Now, it gets really specific to individual teams, right? Because some teams obviously would value him more, other teams wouldn't, and it's
yeah.
just a question of if you can find the right fit with the right team.
Yeah. I mean, put it this way, Columbus picking one pick ahead of Vancouver, 14,
yeah.
would they deal 14 outright for Thatcher Demko? Maybe. They'd at least think about it.
They'd have a meeting. Yeah, they'd have
so
a meeting.
They would
talk about it.
So it's close. It's close. I think
okay.
it's close.
Yeah, so it's in there. So that's another option that they could go.
Yeah.
But again, as based on your reporting, sounds less likely, but you never know.
No, I mean, I think what's more likely is that the club will at least try
mm-hmm.
to figure out a way to extend Demko, something Demko is open to too. But that's a really complicated conversation, because to make that work, there has to be a sense of shared risk, right? What's the risk that the Canucks will take on? They'll commit, you know, years to a guy who had three prolonged injury-related absences over the course of this season. What's the Demko risk? He's not going to be paid like the quality of goaltender that he is if he accepts that deal this summer, right? The trade-off's going to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a complicated negotiation, one with potential to not result in a deal, and if you sort of end up in that place, right, that changes sort of, I would never say like it's likely to result one way or the other. I'd say there's openness on both sides to explore
mm-hmm.
an extension, but given the complications on both sides, I would be 0% surprised if like they can't reach an agreement and there's a different outcome here.
Yeah. Okay, I want to run through some potential trade targets around the league, and just first blush, your response, like, not does the 15th pick get it done just on its own, but what's the other you, if you call Team X and say, hey, we're interested in this player, starting point for a package, 15th overall pick, what's their response? What are they asking for? How far down the road does it get you? All right, Josh Norris, You call Buffalo, 15th overall. We want Josh Norris. What do they say?
I think no.
No, is it? But it's not. It's probably not like, okay, but we want Verlander too.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Well, what's interesting about Buffalo is that they're presumably going to be like thirsty for veteran talent in kind of a unique way, right? And maybe there's a contract or two that they have signed that they'd want to shed, although maybe even Norris qualifies. No, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
If it's
that at least that's something you could sell. It's like, well, we're also getting out of the contractual commitment there.
Yeah. Well, like, so what if it was Mancini, the first, and Teddy Bluger? Right. So you get like a veteran center.
Sure.
You get a young D and you get off the Samuelson commitment. Right. The Canucks, I mean, they don't need that left side depth, but that's sort of part of
So for Norris and Samuelson.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm saying the Canucks take 10 million in money off the books while sending 2 million back on a 1-year deal, a veteran center that they might look at as being like a culture guy for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You sort of free up a Ratu spot in the process if you're Vancouver. You trade 15, you get Norris, and you get a defenseman. I don't know. I mean, that to me would at least be interesting.
I like that.
I think Buffalo would have to think about it.
Yeah, I like that for sure. All right, so Josh Norris at least. And that to me, you're talking about Mancini, which like then we're clearly into the second and third tier of assets. You know what I mean?
My gut is no, but I don't think it's like an unworkable baseline to begin the conversation.
You're not throwing another tier one asset into it, right? If you're starting with 15th overall.
Yeah,
at least,
right?
Depending on all the other moving pieces and everything, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a complicated one, but I would say it's probably a conversation starter. Then,
all right, how about Connor McMichael?
No.
So they're saying okay, and Lekkerimäki or and Vilander or and whatever.
100%.
Yeah. Okay. Marco Rossi. Contract situation. The way they're talking in Minnesota seems to be strongly leaning towards they're going to trade him.
Well, I mean, look at their moves. Like, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out what the Wild vision for their team is. And it's, you know, big hulking size. It's a lot more Joel Eriksson-esque than it is Marco Rossi.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be a conversation starter. But again, I think you'd have to give up more. I think
sure.
There's another. Maybe is it first Mancini?
Yeah. Okay. But a conversation starter.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. That interests me. That interests me very much.
Me too.
Marco Rossi
is good.
Maverick Bourque.
Ooh. That's interesting.
Could that be like the straight up sweet spot? Or at least like pretty low tier add-ons?
If I'm Dallas though, like the point of getting 15 is like I don't want 15.
You want it to package for something else.
Well, no, I want something with more time on it. You know, like I'm looking at it as, okay, well, I traded these two firsts for Rantanen.
Yeah.
Right? And ideally, the value of getting a first-round pick for Maverick Bourque, in my mind anyway, is having a piece to sell on to bolster my lineup short-term while I'm in a cup window.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, if I'm the Dallas Stars, I'm absolutely, and the Canucks approach me with 15, I'm, like, absolutely pushing to instead get the 2026 first.
Right.
Right. And even if I have to give back a pick, you know what I mean? Or like, what have you add, because I just want the asset to trade on later on. Like the first round pick from Maverick Bourque doesn't interest me. The first round pick in 2026 that I can, you know, lottery protected to 2027 that I can package to get X, you know,
yeah, that you can
over
use
a top player
that you can use as ammunition at the next trade deadline.
Correct.
That's what you're most interested in.
That's what I'd be most interested in. So I just think the fit of acquiring the pick is odd for Dallas, but I think the value,
the price is
basically right.
Is there. Okay. Yeah. That's an interesting one. I'm trying to think. I have some other names. Okay. Some are obviously not going to work, right? Like Gabe Vilardi.
No, I wouldn't think that would
work. I don't think that works. I think that's a significantly bigger package. He's not a center. I'm not necessarily talking about centers.
Right, okay.
I'm less concerned about the set. Like, obviously, they need centers, but they just need really good players.
Yeah, I mean,
that's number one.
I mean, I think, like, the Vilardi-Perfetti tier, I think neither of those guys go for 15.
No. I think
you'd have to add
15 plus Lekkerimäki, 15 plus Vilander, that kind of tier. Trevor Zegras. That's an overpay? 15th overall at this point?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. All right.
I'd still do it, though.
but you probably get something back.
Maybe.
You know, get a pick in there or something.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, so this is actually, like, I'm actually feeling better about the trade value of this pick after this exercise than I was going into it.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you meaningful flexibility.
There are, like, Marco Rossi, that's very interesting to me, right? Trevor Zegras, I know I'm a little bit on an island on this. A lot of people react very negatively against it, but that, like, if you go down the list and you eventually get to Trevor Zegras, I'm very interested in that conversation. I'm willing to make that happen. Guy like Maverick Bork. So I think there's at least enough they can do there. But then again, it comes back to the conversation of, is that even the right course? Like, how much are you essentially throwing good money after bad if you trade that pick? As they've traded so many picks, as we talked about on the show yesterday. Anyways, we can continue that conversation, but there is some other stuff I want to hit in the headlines.
I think where I'm coming up against the reality of this situation is that I do feel like this path that the Canucks are on has been paved by this exact type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Where, hey, look, you trade a mid-first for JT Miller, that's a huge win, and it is. But it doesn't matter if your team doesn't succeed, right? Like, you trade for Filip Hronek, that a mid-first, that's a huge win. Except it doesn't matter if it doesn't propel your team forward. Like, there's this idea that one of the downsides of making draft picks is the uncertainty of making draft picks. That, like, hey, a player now is a player now. The draft pick could be anything. It could even be a boat, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I get it, but also that volatility is the inherent value of it. Like, the value is that if you get a Rob Thomas, if you get the Wyatt Johnston type, right? Like, if you hit, if you connect, even if it's a Stankoven type, right? Then whether that's your player for years and years or a trade asset that helps you get something even better, that ultimately is going to have more value than, like, a second pair defenseman.
Yep.
Or honestly, even like a late 20s top six forward. You know, so I do think there's an element to which I'm just sort of coming up against this reality where it's like, I get that it makes sense for the Canucks to go all in this summer. I get the unique considerations that Alvin and Rutherford are working through as they sort of consider their options in the weeks and months ahead. But I can't shake this, like, overall sense that fundamentally at some point this team needs to start doing, like, the hard, unsexy, uncertain work of actually grafting, like, upside and value slowly and with a long-term view in mind onto this roster, or we're going to get stuck in this cycle where, like, this team's just mid and perception around it vacillates wildly based on things that the team's not really controlling, like, you know, in-season momentum and a run of hot goaltending or a run of shooting luck. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're really just something like the 17th to 12th best team in the league. And really, who cares, right? Like, really, what do you get for that? A playoff berth every 3 or 4 years? Cool.
I would just like to see, like, a three-year span where they make, like, 8 picks combined in the first and second round. And that's not a crazy number. You get 6. You get 6 given to you. You know what I mean? Like, let's just do, like, 2 or 3 years where you make, like, 2 extra picks across the first 2 rounds. And let's see what happens after that. That would just be a nice breath of fresh air, I think, from this organization. We can talk a lot more about draft strategy, potential targets if they do hold the pick, potential targets if they trade it later on in the show. Other headline, Leafs take game 1 against Florida. 5-4 is the final. But really, the big talking point coming out of this one, Anthony Stolarz leaves the game for the Leafs shortly after Sam Bennett crashes the crease and catches Stolarz's head with, some people are saying, an elbow. Looks more like almost the hand or the forearm to me as he crashes the crease. No supplementary discipline for Sam Bennett. Stolarz is doubtful. Scary scenes for Stolarz, vomiting on the bench, and he had to leave on a stretcher, go to the hospital.
Well, he'd taken head contact earlier in the game.
Yeah.
A shot that rang off his, that buzzed the tower and rang off his mask. And so you hate to see that.
Absolutely. Now, having said that, like, I've watched the replay a lot. I was watching it just before we came on the air. I'm struggling to see the massively dirty intent to injure play from Sam Bennett in this. And I get it. Like, we've been doing the show long enough now. You know, the day after a player on the team you cover leaves a game after a somewhat suspect hit,
so emotional.
There's so much emotion, and it's doubled or tripled or whatever when it's the Stanley Cup playoffs and it's a goalie and all of that, right? I get where the emotion is coming from, but when I watch it, it doesn't look intentional. It doesn't look like particularly severe contact. He's taken the puck to the net. No. It doesn't look like he's not even like really, you know, chicken winging, sticking the elbow out.
His elbow's tucked.
His elbow's tucked in.
The force is not like go look at like the elbows and the Rule 48 violations that result in suspension, and they don't look like this. Like, yeah. I'm sorry that that's the NHL standard. If your argument to me is you think the NHL should have a different standard for protecting, you know, the head, I would say I agree with you. If you want the league to have a harsher standard for protecting goaltenders from the sort of contact that, you know, not that equipment can anyway, but that specifically goaltending equipment is not designed, right, to protect from the way that like a skater's helmet is, you know, you've got an ally in me. I'll agree with you all day long. But with the way that the league is currently calling things, you know, this to me is one of those where very clear that they missed a penalty on the play, that there should have been a penalty assessed, but I don't really see the grounds for supplemental discipline here.
No, I don't either. And I think obviously the fact that it's Sam Bennett and he plays on the line, right? He's crossed the line several times before in his career. So there's that heightened scrutiny. It's Toronto, so there's all the media attention. I just don't see it with this play of all the plays in Sam Bennett's career. Anyways, we can talk more about that with Justin Cuthbert in a few minutes when he joins us at 12:30. Quickly in the broadsheet, one note. Now, I don't know if this is so much reporting as it is speculation, maybe informed speculation, but Rob Rossi, your athletic colleague out of Pittsburgh, on Blue Sky. This is not a tweet. This is, what do they call them over there? Skeets. This is a skeet from Rob Rossi. Says,
say that three times fast.
I will not. Nobody asked, but Manny Malhotra's resume.
Or say it twice and then swear.
Yeah. After you said Mikko Rantanen was twerking around the net yesterday, yeah. I'm going to leave skeeting alone.
Say it twice fast and then add God damn, and we'll get the producers to do a little John drop.
To the window?
Rob Rossi, going to the walls with this one, says, nobody asked, but Manny Malhotra's resume sure makes him seem like an ideal to be next Penguins coach. Former player, grinder, NHL experience as assistant, AHL head coach. Vets would respect him for having played. Young players would benefit from his coaching experience. Mm. And I just wanted to pass that along. Again, not necessarily smart. A report, but often when beat writers throw this out as like, hey, I'm not reporting it, but I wonder if Manny Malhotra would be a good fit. Sometimes it's because they've heard something.
It is funny when there's like comments, like, you know, I wrote a thing about like sort of a Canucks end of season recap at the Athletic.
Yep.
And a lot of the focus of it was Quinn Hughes's future and how that impacts the summer. Mm-hmm. And this was, you know, before everyone was talking about it every moment of every day in this market. And there were like some comments that were like, not a lot of original reporting in here, mostly just doomerism. But it's like, you imagine I'd talk to people.
Yeah.
Like, just consider that I'm not pulling this out of nowhere.
So that's what I'm considering with Rob Rossi here. And I just thought it was notable. First time I've seen Malhotra's name connected to a non-Canucks job opening. But makes sense. Smart. People are going to be looking for successful AHL coaches with the type of resume that Rossi outlined there, and they're going to wonder about it.
And smart connecting of the dots by Rossi, something I hadn't considered myself. But, of course, Dubas poached Malhotra.
Very true.
Sheldon Keefe was, of course, you know, the head coach of the Leafs at that time. Dubas and Sheldon Keefe, thick as thieves, right? So he'd have a very... like even more so than your average GM, a 360-degree view into Malhotra's impact on that Leafs coaching staff. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why that's an interesting suggestion from Rossi.
Yeah, a potentially totally unsourced suggestion from Rossi, but maybe something to it there from Rob Rossi out of Pittsburgh. All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break. Justin Cuthbert from Fan 590 in Toronto and the 32 Thoughts podcast joins us next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Dang it. It was a scam? What?
I can't believe you have to ask whether or not they were Team Pettersson or Team Miller.
You know what, Toby? When the son of the deposed king of Nigeria emails you directly asking for help, you help. His father ran the freaking country.